Have you ever been near to someone who went through something terrible? I don't mean locked your keys in the car during a pouring down storm kind of terrible. I mean heart-ripping, shocking, shake your fists at God kind of terrible. In my years of ministry, I have walked with people through a handful of these kinds of terrible situations. It's a curious thing to feel this kind of vicarious trauma. Do I find it troubling, so troubling, because I love and care for the other person it has hurt so much? Or is there something more universal and less specific in feeling the upset of a world that should be ordered and just, where babies don't die, where a teenager's moment of careless thinking doesn't cost a life, where a mother and her children don't have to flee their home out of fear one night because of her husband's violent rages, where the expected sunset years become an eclipse after the discovery of a terminal illness? You do not have to be a pastor to encounter people who go through these kinds of things. You only have to be human. If you are human, at some point or points, you inhabit that strange place where you teeter between hope and despair, between life and death, between trust in the world that God created and you, and a sense of betrayal by the universe and perhaps God, who seems to have let you down. My family recently purchased a car that has something called eyesight technology. It's mostly a good thing and will probably keep me a safe driver, but I would be lying if I didn't admit that the occasional correcting beep, beep, beep with the slightest swerve out of a lane doesn't annoy me. For that reason, I call it the nanny car. In a TV commercial for my new nanny car, there is a scene of an ambulance pulling a mother and son out of a car crash. We then see them in the hospital. If only they had eyesight technology. Then the commercial backs up and replays the moments before the crash, when the car sees the heavy truck in front of them and quickly applies the brakes, even though the young driver's reflexes had not responded in time. The mom gives her son a look as if to say, "You need to watch it, young man," which is clearly a much better outcome than mother and son lying side by side in hospital beds. The lives and bodies God gives us to inhabit do not have this feature. Following Jesus' death, two followers were in that strange place. Their faces looked sad. They were on the road to Emmaus, another kind of strange place, which is only mentioned once in the Bible and doesn't seem to exist in historical records. Friedrich Buechner said, "Emmaus is a place where we throw our hands up and say, 'Let the whole damn thing go to hang. It doesn't make a difference anyway.'" On their way to this strange place, they were discussing the events of the past day, the trial, crucifixion, death, and burial of Jesus. We had hoped that he was the one who would redeem Israel, they lamented. And then the absurd, these rumors that the women from their group had shared that they had seen the risen Lord. This last bit of speculation was indeed a strange thing, for to these two followers, Cleopas and the woman or man who also traveled with him, had not only never heard of eyesight technology, they only had witnessed death from the side of life and had never seen anyone dip into that side of death only to return to the side of life. That is why when Jesus approached them, Their eyes were kept from recognizing him. They could only see him as a stranger. They were still inhabiting that strange space between hope and despair, between life and death, between trust and betrayal. And all these good things, hope, life, trust, seemed to have been crucified with Jesus. This loss eclipsed the fact, hid it, that Jesus was standing right in front of them and made him simply a stranger. One thing I have found as a pastor is that while I do not take any joy or satisfaction in accompanying people who have experienced trauma and grief, I do find that the Holy Spirit can use me to add hope. This is not because I have any magical phrases that make things better. I know from experience that most words are cheap if they try to make comfortable a situation that is horrible. Words cannot do this. What I do know how to do is to point the way to ordinary things that make up life. Sometimes what I give is as ordinary as offering a drink of water and suggesting a nibble on some bread. It may be so simple as stepping outside to take a walk or offering to say the prayer that they can't manage to form their lips around. If I can convince people to do these things, perhaps I can assure them that they can make it through just one day. And once they make it through just one day, days turn into weeks, weeks turn into months. And one day a person wakes up and finds that at least for that morning, they wake up to hope instead of despair. Over time, there are more mornings of hope than there are of despair, more reasons to choose life than to choose death, more reasons to trust the world and the people in it and the God who formed it than to feel betrayed by these. In a similar way, Jesus did the basic things with Cleopas and his companion. Jesus walked with them, one step in front of the other, until they arrived at Emmaus. When they got to the village, it was late, and so these two voyagers did what any decent Middle Easterner would do. They offered some dinner, and it was over the ordinary act of sharing a meal when Jesus took the bread and blessed it and broke it and shared it with them that their eyes were opened. They saw this man was no stranger. It was Jesus. And as quickly as this realization dawned on them, Jesus was gone. That same hour, they turned back to make the 7-hour trek, returning to Jerusalem, where they saw the 11 disciples. Now remember, Judas is no longer in the picture. "The Lord is risen indeed," they exclaim. No longer are these two in that strange place between hope and despair, life and death, trust and betrayal. Like Jesus, they have made it to the other side and were then ready to proclaim even stranger things to those around them. Hebrews 13:2 advises, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for in doing so, some people have entertained angels without even knowing it." I believe God sometimes meets us in strange places and through strange people. I have told you that I have walked with people through strange times and have tried to help point them on the way toward hope, toward life, and toward trust. But I've also been in strange places, places when despair, death, and betrayal called my name more clearly than did hope, life, and trust. I've already told this congregation about losing my mom when she had a sudden, heart attack while visiting me. And that was, the anniversary of that was just last week. It was 4 years ago. I want to tell you now about a strange encounter I had in the weeks after her death. I will read from a journal entry I made after my first visit to the therapist I went to see for my grief. For me, it was a time of panic and anxiety, and a time when simply putting one foot in front of the other felt like a nuisance. I took the L train in Chicago and yesterday so that I could talk about my grief following my mom's very sudden death. Since I live and work in the same neighborhood, I rarely take the L train and had forgotten that they had replaced the old cars with the new ones, cars that line the seats against the wall rather than two by two facing forward. Well, they also face backwards, but I would always choose the forward-facing seats because I like to know what's ahead of me. Sitting against the wall of the train, my body felt loose and uncontained as the train jostled me side by side. I missed my forward-facing seat, where I could see what was coming and could brace myself for sudden stops and starts. Bing bong! I arrived at my stop and followed the sea of people that then dispersed into each direction. I found my direction and headed to the building where I would be counseled. For an hour, I described my loss and my grief to someone I had just met. Afterward, I retraced my steps to the L. After walking to find an empty part of the platform, not too far from other people, I grasped the iron grating while awaiting the train because you never know what wind or sudden act might sweep me into the line of the oncoming train. Two brown trains came and went. While I awaited my green train, a stranger approached me and caught my eye and asked, "Do you believe that one person can be the barrier of happiness so contagious that it spills out to everyone around?" I eyed him suspiciously, engaged the distance of the oncoming train. Once the train safely passed us and screeched to a halt, I answered, "Yeah, sure." The man then opened a box I had not even noticed that he had. In it were three origami birds. He smiled at me and silently gestured for me to take one. I felt like a cat as I scooped a crumpled bird out of its paper box nest, clutching it lightly between two fingers, lest some unknown substance like anthrax or weirdness seep out and infect me, my house, or my family. Ding dong! The doors opened, and I found my seat on the bench. I left the baby bird in the seat beside me, and out the window saw the man grinning at me while the train left the platform. We turned the corner and stopped at the next elevated stop. The train filled, and the seats beside me were taken. The woman to my left lowered her bottom onto the baby bird of happiness. I felt somehow relieved. Encompassed by people, contained by their bodies on either side of me, the stopping and starting of the train did not jostle me, but instead rocked me into a safe place. I closed my eyes and breathed. When I heard the train announce my stop, I finally opened my eyes. Although the train had mostly emptied, my seatmates were still beside me. We stood and exited the train together and then went our separate ways. That day still stands out to me in my head, and as I continued visiting my grief therapist, the strange train ride into the city for therapy became my Emmaus Road, a symbol of movement from despair to hope, from death to life, from betrayal to trust. Perhaps the strange encounter with the origami man announcing a happiness I did not yet believe in set the expectation for what this train ride could bring. I am convinced that God shows up to meet us on the road, in our strange places, to lead us into the life which Jesus calls us to live abundantly. May God make us open to how the strangers and the strange places in our lives can open us up to holy presence, to life, and to healing. Amen.